talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way to life, I'm fighting and falling down to key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. I read about some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe the fact. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a far-died key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a far-died key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run it down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the end of this program here on LightResistanceRadio.com. Lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. I'm going to play this week's Ethnostate with William Johnson, chairman of the American Freedom Party, Ken Givenham, and Jason Robb, an attorney from Arkansas. Now, I was supposed to be on, but I had trouble with the connections from my hotel. So you won't be hearing me to this week, but this is the Ethnostate with William Johnson, Ken Givenham, and Jason Robb.
Hello, everyone. This is William Johnson, chairman of the American Freedom Party, here with another edition of The Ethnostate, along with Ken Givenham and Jason Robb. We would have had Paul Fromm from Canada, but he's up at a hotel somewhere in the far northern reaches, and he couldn't get in. So it's just going to be the three of us. And actually, we've had a lot of interesting developments of late. First of all, I want to tell you a little bit about a phone call that I had just before this thing started. I got a phone call. It was some sort of snide, snippy person. He says, "Oh, hello, is this the American Freedom Party?" And I said, "Yes." He says, "Well, I just want to know, who should I hate?" And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" He says, "Well, you're a hate group, and I want to know who I should hate. I don't hate everybody, but I just want to know who I should hate." And I said, "Well, we don't hate anybody. We're called a hate group by a lot of people, but we're not a hate group. Well, don't you hate black people?" And I said, "Actually, we have a very large contributor who's black." He said, "Why is that?" I said, "Well, because he thinks that if Western civilization dies out, if the white race dies out, then it's going to be bad news for everybody." And that's what he was taught. And then this caller that was being a little snippy, you could hear a child wailing in the background. And the guy, he was just kind of a it was too early to be drunk, but he was just some sort of snarky white guy. He said, well, still, I want to know who to hate. I said, well, you know, probably, I guess, if you have to put it down into one group of people, it's probably the white people who interracially marry and have mixed race kids. And click, he hung up. So I don't know if that hit too close to home or if it just, I just wasn't mean enough for his liking. But
do you have caller ID? Is there somewhere you can trace this guy?
Oh, you know, I don't want to do that yet. It's not worth it to me. You know, if he sent a check and it bounced, then I'd trace it. But if he's just making snarky calls, I don't want to do that. But then another thing I want to talk about, and this it comes up last week, Ken, we were not able to view the stream on YouTube because YouTube cut us off. I guess, I'm not sure why, but I guess it felt we were too big of a threat that our 45 listeners we didn't want it to grow to 46, so they cut us off. Or what was that? What's the situation on that, Ken?
Well, the way that works is if you upload a video that the community considers offensive or hate speech, then they will take that video down and give you a strike. I'm hearing background. You guys hear that?
I do. That's not for me, I don't think.
I have no idea where it's coming from.
I don't hear it.
What about you, Rob or Jason?
I mean, me, I guess. I don't hear anything.
But, anyhow, what, excuse me, Jason. What these guys do is they will select an old video and they'll describe that. Sometimes it's one guy using a bot, but YouTube sees a bunch of people offended by this video. They don't necessarily even look at it, they just take it down. That's a strike. If that happens three times, they take down your channel. So, and I've been taken down five times. They've done this over and over. So we've got one strike, and we get two more to take us down. So the way that I have defended myself in the past is I tell people who follow us, not all of them, but the ones that I know that I can depend on. If they take down a video, I'll send you the video, and you can upload it. So every time they take down a video, it goes back up, not only on YouTube, but it goes up on multiple platforms many times. So the video that they took down, let me see if I can find it. It was a video we made, you may remember this. It's a segment, and it's called Are White People Too Nice? I'm trying to find where that noise is.
I guess probably what it was is the white people that were monitoring us wanted to prove that we're not nice, so they took us off. But the reason why I bring this up is that, of course, YouTube and social media is a great way to reach an audience. But over the weekend, I was in Arizona, and it's just so hot there. But I was at for a storm front function. Just a little barbecue. And it was so hot, you didn't want to go outside. So I was in my hotel room, just trying to pass the time of day until the meeting started. And there was what was called a DirecTV. And on DirecTV, there were like 900 channels. And I started clicking through. I never used DirecTV before. But they all came up with all sorts of commercial, infomercial-type channels. Like there was one on, did talcum powder cause your cancer? There's like four of those. Another was Hoover vacuum cleaner, 30-minute infomercial on Hoover vacuum cleaners, or air thrust barbecues, or all of this. We're having a beach body. It was just channel after channel after channel of these long advertisements for products. And so I thought, well, you know, who's looking to that? Probably a lot of the people that are maybe your age, Ken, or my age, or twice as old, or three times as old as you, Jason, and they probably got their checkbooks out, and they're saying, yeah, I like that. I want to get a new Hoover back so I can clean up my room, you know, for my, to have make a space for my air thrust barbecue. And so I was thinking, What if we tried to contact, go a little more traditional channels? What if we bought one of these channels on DirecTV, and then at the end, you know, we do like they have a toll-free number, say, okay, get out your checkbook and mail us money to that, such and such. Because what Jason has to say is a heck of a lot more interesting than how strong a vacuum cleaner works on the carpet. What do you think of that, you guys?
I don't know.
I
like some of those commercials.
What came to mind is I have a beach ball body. I don't think that counts, though. I don't think that's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But I like your idea. I think it's a matter of coming up with money. No, they may not let us do it. Yeah.
But, I mean, how much could it cost? Because, like, do you have... Did talcum powder cause your cancer? Was on like five different channels I was flipping through there. And how many people are going to contact, I guess I was probably done by lawyers. I mean, I don't think it's very expensive. Maybe we should check it out.
What some of these companies do, you know, I was in marketing for about 30 years, but some of these companies do what's called per inquiry advertising. So it doesn't cost anything unless you get a sale. And I'm not sure that's how they do it, but then they have to proceed to sale. So that may or may not be why they submitted a project. But,
well, Ken, if that's the way it works, we could go years without having to pay a penny.
That's true, probably. But nothing to say. Right now, they do that for us. But the only way to find out is call them and ask them.
Okay.
You might tell them you're an attorney, but you tell them. Yeah.
I'll check into that and see what I can do. All right. Well, with that introduction, let's move on to the topics. The first topic really brings to mind something that I thought about a long time. I thought, at what point is society going to collapse? At what point can we no longer support the burgeoning, unsupportable people that we have? Like, when I was living in Japan, when I was a lot younger, they said, you know, Japanese are all pretty much on the same pattern. Not real smart people, not real dumb people. But in America, you've got super smart people and you've got super dumb people, just like amount like that. And at some point in time, it's going to be so top heavy, it's going to flip over, and all the big group of unmanageable, uneducatable, untrainable, unproductive people are just going to over collapse the society. And so I thought, well, when's that going to happen? Well, Ken, you showed me that it happened in New Orleans. So tell us about that story.
Is it New Orleans or New Orleans? It's kind of like New Orleans. Nobody seems to know. Anyhow, according to, and this comes from Stanford Advocate, which seems to be a fairly prestigious publication. There are 56,000 outstanding arrest warrants in New Orleans. About, how do you say that, Jason?
I said New Orleans.
New Orleans, okay.
Well, he's closer to it than we are, so he's got to be right.
Yeah, you're down south, but that's 1 in 7. 1 in 7 adults in New Orleans has an outstanding warrant. These are not guys who have arrest records. They have arrest records that are outstanding. So, you know, the question that came to my mind is, well, they just haven't, getting away with something. I don't know. But, so I say, considering men commit crimes at a higher rate than women, the ratio of adult males is probably much higher. So who knows? New Orleans is 59.8% black, just say 60% black, and about a third of the residents are white. So, do you want me to go on and read a couple of paragraphs from the source article?
I do. This is a very important social issue. So go ahead, continue giving us the facts.
Well, let's peer into the future of America. And effectively, it's what we're doing. 52 arrestees. Outfitted in orange and maroon jumpsuits await their first appearance before a judge. Most are black. I'm surprised they admitted that. All require a public defender, and more than half of them are here, their hands chained against their stomachs because they missed a court date on a minor crime triggering an arrest warrant. So these are not highly responsible individuals, apparently. Lauren Anderson, a public defender and attorney supervisor for the municipal court, is furious as she looks over the list of names. I would like to see that list of names. We probably have fun with it. It doesn't make any sense. She says we're not making the city safer. We're only hurting these people. And we just keep doing it over and over. It's infuriating. One more sentence. And by the way, I would disagree with you. I think it is keeping the city safer. There are more than 56,000 outstanding warrants in New Orleans Municipal Court, dating all the way back 2002, according to city data. A staggering 1 of 7 adults in the country's 50th largest city have a warrant for their arrest. What would you do if you had a warrant for your arrest? Is that true?
I'd move to New Orleans. But, you know, if you want to hide from the law, that's the place to do it.
How do you think that passed? I mean, I couldn't come up with a quip like that if I had to. Yeah, just move to New Orleans.
Well, you know, we generally are on top of things. I have to renew my driver's license, and so I just, as soon as I found out how to do it, I jumped right onto it. We don't let things slip through the cracks. And so that's just in our nature. Their nature is they don't do it until they're forced to do it. So I don't know.
I would like to say that law and order has always been a trademark of our people, and that is something that even minor offenses we consider are very serious, and we go and take care of things because that's just how we respect law and order. I mean, that's again our nature. Blacks, I mean, any I don't care if you look at New Orleans or Detroit, I guarantee the statistics are probably about the same as well. I'm probably even worse in Detroit, but it all goes back to the racial makeup of those cities, and so you don't have the same as a white city.
And that's why we get kicked off YouTube, because of what you just said. You just told the truth, and you can't tell the truth.
Yeah. So next time, once you get your second strike, we dedicate it to Jason Robb. Okay. Let's look at the overall social result or influence that this development has on us. First of all, you mentioned that every one of these people are going to occupy law enforcement because they have to get arrested, occupy the legal system, not just the judges, but we have to have a public defender provided free of charge. They are not going to be able to work in an important position. They're not going to be able to join, work for government. I don't mean to imply that working for the government is an important position. They're not going to be able to work for the government. They're not going to be able to join the military. They're not going to be able to join big corporations. They're going to be relegated to living off the dole. So their entire lives, 1 out of 7 or more, are not going to be productive members of society ever. And they're going to continue to have children, and so it's just going to flip society upside down. And I think it's only going to get worse until it gets better. And how is it going to get better? We need that ethnostate. But I think that, like Jason said, as New Orleans goes, so goes the rest of the nation. All these cities that have these demographic changes are going to face the same economic, social, and other problems.
I read a statistic one time. I didn't see any documentation to back it up, but I have no reason to doubt it. But the statistic was, I can't remember the exact number, but it's like a nation with an average IQ of around 93 cannot be self-governed. They have to have a strong, central, authoritarian government. And free people must necessarily be smart, be free. And it seems to me that there is an effort to dumb us down. I know some highly intelligent black people, some very good friends, but they're not, well, they're atypical relative to the aggregate of the black community as a whole, which has, in America, has an average IQ of 85. So if we keep this influx of Islamic, I care better not use that word, and Hispanics who have low IQ, you know, Saudi Arabia, they buy jet fighters. Nobody can fly them because they're too dumb. You know, they got a couple guys, but we go over there and try to train them. They can't figure out how to fly them.
Right, but see,
they can't be governed.
The issue that you are talking about is different from the issue that the article is talking about. You're talking about IQ, but this is a different personality trait: follow through, just responsibility. Like, for example, when our people, when we settled this country, when something had to be done, we went out and did it. If there was nothing around but prairie sod, we dug the sod and built sod houses in preparation for the winter, and we stored potatoes or whatever it was so that we could last. And these other people didn't do that. They didn't plan ahead. They don't plan ahead. They had to wait till our homes were built, and then they move into the area after what we built that. So what we're talking about now is a different personality trait than intelligence. It's a lack of follow-through. They would rather sit on a porch and chew the fat than actually go out and complete something. And if, you know, like you brought up the question about what I would do if I had a warrant for my arrest, well, you know, I made a snarky answer, but the real answer is I would clear it up. I would hire an outstanding lawyer, and if I had to go to Arkansas to do it, I'd ask Jason Rupp, clear up my my warrant, and I'd get it done.
Well, I remember, William, that, you know, my dad's probably told this story before, but you know, he was raised in Detroit, and he said when Detroit was a majority a white city, you know, obviously you had a black population, but even your black communities, when it was ruled and governed by whites, the black communities were safe, the marriages were intact, black girls were able to safely walk home to their homes at night. The black communities were safe. They were employed. But that, when you have a white community or white city like Detroit at that time in the 40s, up until it started changing back in the 60s, but all the way up until that time, Detroit was a safe city because it was a white city. Even though you had non-whites living there and they had non-white communities, they were still safe communities. They were still, the non-whites were able to be employed. The marriages and families were all intact because, again, you were living in a white city and was governed by whites. And it goes back to that authoritarian perspective from the standpoint of white communities. Whites have always obeyed law and order. That's a trademark of our society. And so when you had blacks who got out of line, they were dealt with. If whites got out of line, they were dealt with because it was a law and order society. We have shifted that. Now we are always looking to someone else to blame. We do not take responsibility. And that is a trademark of, for the most part, your black communities, is they do not take responsibility for their actions. That is their trademark.
This is a question that I have asked Bill Johnson and Paul Cronin a couple times, so I'm going to ask you, Jason. What is it about Jason Rod that you seem to be immune from brainwashing? You seem to be immune from copying. Have I asked you this before?
I don't believe so.
I mean, you're thinking clearly, you got it, you're not bullied or intimidated by cultural Marxism. There seems to be a select few people, and not just white people, I know some black people, and if they were white, we'd call them white nationalists, but they're not. But there seems to be a tiny minority of people who think clearly, and they just bombard us with all this, we're going to call you racist if you don't shut up. We don't shut up, and they call us racist anyhow. You know? So what? Why is that, Jason, that you can't be, or you seem to be immune from thought reform?
I don't know. I guess I would say it's the family I was raised in.
No, I think it was more the clerkship you did when you worked in Los Angeles.
That's probably the second part.
Okay.
But it's I mean, surrounding with people and families that basically had racial integrity, who had love for their race and love for their culture, and really don't have a sense of hatred. I'm talking about myself, me as a white nationalist or someone who loves my race, doesn't hate another race. You can love your own people without hating another race. Yep. And those social Marxists, the cultural Marxists, they want to implant that in the average white person's mind that if you love your race, then you hate another race. And that's what they want you to think. And that's not the fact. Is you can love your people without hating another race.
But it works. It's very effective.
Okay. What you talked about when you gave the example of Detroit is you talked about, you said that, well, when the whites were in control, we had authority in that community. We had control. We had authority. We had discipline. And now what has happened is the white power structure has pulled back from its control of all aspects of American life and Western civilization life. Why? I think that future anthropologists, if we survive this terrible era we live in, will look back and say that there was one single factor that caused the destruction of Western countries. It was the fear of the word racism. That, I mean, for 35 years or 40 years, the people have wanted to build a wall. We wanted no immigration. We wanted to have our own safe communities. But the politicians would not act because they did not want to do anything that would make them be called racist. And you had all these marketing companies now that are putting advertisements on, and Ken, you've mentioned this over and over again, that all the advertising, and when I was in Phoenix waiting for this Stormfront conference to come on, I was watching all these ads. There were so many mixed race couples in the ads, it was sickening. Why? Because the people who are promoting that, the ones who are writing the scripts, they don't want to have a white man with a white woman with beautiful white children because they think, oh, I'm going to be called racist. So the fear of being called racist has made us so afraid to take control of our society that we're basically living in an anarchical state, I think, and it's moving in that direction.
We live a lie, we live in a state of denial, we live in a fake world, you know? I think the key word is practice.
And self-censorship. You know, we censor ourselves because we don't want to be called a racist or a bigot or a hater or all the other words they like to throw at us.
That's true.
But we also have to realize that there is a lot of bad eggs within our own people that we need this discipline and straighten up. And then what comes to mind is the name New Orleans. I remember reading a few years ago, the Duke of Orleans in Paris, France, he was actually considered to be the heir to the throne, the you know, what is called the throne, to all the Louis of 16th, 18th, whatever they were. But the Duke of Orleans, if they reestablished monarchy, he'd be in charge. And his descendants went to court, his children and grandchildren, to try to stop him from dissipating his fortune. He spent his entire life blowing through all of the money and all of the wealth, all the antiques he had. All he wanted to do was gamble and drink and carouse and take drugs. And so he would take all of these vast treasures that was left over from his ancestors and sell them off so he could live his lifestyle. So his descendants went in there and said, hey, courts, stop this. We need to have a legacy for the future. And the court said, hey, you know, they're his stuff. He can do what he wants. So someone who came from that august of a legacy, who would claim to the throne, was such a dissipated person that you'd have to put him in the same category as Prince Harry with his black wife. The monarchy is just messed up. We need to reestablish a society where good prevails and where we have authority to do what is good. And we can only do that by reestablishing an ethno state. But in any event, I've kind of beat this topic into the ground. So let's go on to another topic. The next topic I want to talk about is, well, it's the next one down the line. Landlord faces fine after threatening to call ICE on illegal alien tenant. So tell us what this outrage is all about.
This occurred in New York City, and there was a landlord and a tenant. The tenant was not paying his or the tenant happened to be an illegal alien. I'm starting to think that noise is going back. It was not. But anyhow, the landlord is facing a $17,000 fine. I'm not sure how the intricacies of this works, but you probably know. But now she got to pay a $17,000 fine because she called ICE on an illegal alien. And for some reason, that is hate.
It's probably figured into some sort of local municipal law retaliation or something like that. I don't know.
Appeal is the word I was trying to think of. So.
I'm sorry, what word?
Appeal.
Yeah. So, you know, this is just one small indication of the erosion of society. But what does the counselor from Arkansas have to say on this point?
Well, when I read this article, I honestly couldn't have believed that this person was giving I think it was a civil penalty. If I read the article, rather, like $5,000 the judge was recommending for a civil penalty, and like $12,000 for emotional distress for threatening to call ICE. And to me, I just simply couldn't believe the article, because here's a person who all he was doing is threatening to call a legitimate arm of the state, ICE, which is a law enforcement arm of the state, and threatening to call them in order to let them know that there's an illegal immigrant here in the United States. And basically the judge is saying to threatening an illegal alien that you're going to report them in is against the law. And I couldn't even believe that was even happening. I mean, I guess I could believe it, but actually reading it and seeing where a New York judge was going to do that. But it doesn't surprise me. I mean, New York judge, I mean, I'm sure that judge is very much a liberal and Marxist judge. And so it doesn't actually surprise me that this judge would recommend this civil penalty.
Well, I think that there's something going on similar to that on a larger scale. For example, we had a situation, while we're talking about this issue in our little small talk show, the conservative Republicans are talking about the larger scale happening on a bigger basis.
Sure.
What happened was the claim is that Donald Trump asked Ukraine to investigate on the illegal activities of Vice President Biden's son by getting paid money when he wasn't supposed to get paid. And as a result, the Democrats in Congress are clamoring for Donald Trump's impeachment. They're saying, oh, you cannot ask a foreign government to investigate something, to give you dirt on the vice president's son. So they don't focus in on the illegal or the potential illegal activities of Biden's son. They focus upon Donald Trump alleged contacting Ukraine to get some skinny on that. And this is the exact same thing on a larger scale, where they don't go after the illegal alien, they go after the person who's wanting to move forward against the illegal alien. So that's the country we live in. That's what we have to deal with.
How will this affect other landlords? Will they be intimidated, or are they going to wise up and say, I'm going to report this guy, I'm just not going to tell him?
Well, I think that's what ought to happen. Landlords just need to contact ICE and just let them know that they're an illegal alien. But if they're getting paid, then they're probably not going to do that.
However, you have to realize that the real prima mobile, the real motivating factor is not the actual contacting of ICE, because if you contact ICE, nothing is going to happen. It's when you tell the individual, I'm going to contact ICE, that elicits a response. ICE is too big, too monolithic, have too many things to worry about. I mean, if that person was a part of a factory that employed 150 illegal aliens, you know, chopping, you know, cutting up chickens, for example, then yes, ICE coming in would be a specter over their heads. But one single report of one single individual, ICE isn't going to move on that. So the way the government is looking at it, or the courts are looking at it, is that that threat is what we have to act upon. And if all the landlords did report that, there still would be no action, because ICE doesn't take action on individual cases. But in any event, let's move on to another topic.
Can I ask one more question real quick?
Sure.
What would happen if a landlord refused to rent property to an illegal alien because they're an illegal alien?
It depends on the municipality. Some municipalities have passed laws saying that you cannot discriminate based upon them being illegal aliens. And I think maybe Harrison, Arkansas is one of those cities. Is that right?
I believe so.
I think probably that'd be the last city in the country that would do that.
I think that'd be the first one they would report.
Yeah, I think that they're ever broadening the protected classes. Like Los Angeles, for example, it recently they added sexual orientation, and then even beyond that, transgenderism as a protected class. So they'll keep expanding it, and I'm waiting for the day when they expand it to include our political views, but I better not hold my breath. Okay, moving on to the next topic. I understand that the Department of Homeland Security has now named Jason Robb as a terrorist. Is that true?
Well, yeah. I guess if they want to consider me a white supremacist, I guess potentially could be on that list, but that's where they're going towards. Anyone that is going to be a white supremacist, they're going to be targeting, it looks like.
The white people are superior in playing in high school. So the white supremacists.
Well, I think that
if you're a white supremacist, then you're potentially could cause harm to other people because you have that mentality of wanting keeping an ethnostate, so you're going to commit crimes. I mean, I guess that's too...
Yeah, but if you look at the larger picture, if an individual group, whether they're Filipinos or whether they're Germanic people or whoever, if you think that your people are the best, then all sorts of good can flow from that. Now, leaving aside the bad that can flow from it, just look to see what's the good that can flow from it. First of all, if you think, oh, we're the best, you have pride in yourself, and you identify with your group, and so you want to not do anything that will bring disrepute to your particular group. So you naturally will act as a better person. Also, if you think that you're the best, then you will want to impart your genes onto your children so it preserves your heritage. You wouldn't have so much interracial marriage among whites and non-whites, and the white race would exist if all the whites thought that they were better than everybody else. So I think rather than saying that a white supremacist is a terrorist, I think that people should, of whatever stripe they are, should be encouraged to think that they are the best, but then work to kind of deal with the issues that the Department of Homeland Security is concerned with to stop terrorist activities. So maybe focus on a combination of someone who's a white supremacist and desires to go out and harm other people. But I think that we need to come to a situation where every group of people think that they are the best and proud of who they are. And as we live in today's society, every group of people is empowered to think that, except our own. And that's not fair. In fact, that has resulted in the genocide of our people.
What is what's interesting is last week we were talking about random white men who were being attacked in Minneapolis. This week we're talking about white people being supremacists. They don't count those street thugs as being a racist or supremacist or anything else, but they don't even call black. They just ignore it. To me, that is being supremacist.
Well, it comes back to the fact that the blacks agitate so much that the media, the politicians, the average Joe Dokes on the street, all are afraid to point out, oh, this is a black problem because of what we talked about, the specter of being called a racist. And that's what we have to combat. I mean, and it hits home everywhere we go. You will have, for example, there was a case where a black man came out of a store and punched a white guy on the ground. He pulled out his gun, he shot and killed the black man. Well, that was a stand your ground law, and the police says, oh, stand your ground. The black's agitated, so the prosecutor says, okay, well, we'll charge him. And so then other white people, they don't want to be called racist, so they convicted this guy. When he was not the aggressor, he was standing there, I guess, telling some gal not to park in a handicap zone, and this black guy comes there, pushes him to the ground, punches him, and so the white guy pulls out a gun and shoots him. Well, because of black agitation, that man is going into jail. Well, that and the small fact that he killed the black man, but I guess those two combined together, I meant that he's going to jail. So you have black agitation. And you have this case of this terrible tragedy where you had this black mother allowed her little child to fall into a gorilla pit, and so immediately, this is Hammurabi or whatever the name is, so immediately the zookeepers took the gun and shot the gorilla, not giving the gorilla a chance to even back away, because it was a black baby that fell in there, and they didn't want to be caused, oh, you're racist, by hesitating. Or if it had been a white baby in there, they would have tried to see if they could save the gorilla and the baby both, and that's what I would have done. If it were a white baby, I'd want to preserve this fine animal, not just go shoot them because they're afraid of being called racist. Every aspect of society is collapsing because of the fear of being called racist. But there's still memorials to Hammurabi, I think that's his name, and that was too bad. I think it was a good animal, a worthy animal, and he didn't need to be shot like that. It was fear of being called racist that they acted so promptly and without regard to animal life. Okay, in any event, let's go on. Let's go to the bottom one. Watch hate group of children chant, "Who do we hate?"
I'm Fox City Midge here in San Francisco at the Close the Camps, Free the Children protest, and it is nuts. There are people out here today on a school day, on a work day. Children have been brought out of school, out of the classroom, to come to protest to free the children. However, most of these children are very young, many of them as young as kindergarten age, 5 years old, and they are not entirely aware of the ramifications and the reality of illegal immigration, but they're being used to push a political agenda.
Tell us about that, Ken.
This occurred in San Francisco, California. And there's a group of kids participating in a rally. My understanding is they were without school to do this. And this is such an indictment against our government schools, and specifically the teachers who work there. But the story is that children as young as 5 years old, and this was called a video, by the way, were allowed to skip school last week to participate in a hate Trump rally. That's what I'm going to do. The rally occurred in San Francisco, California, but was billed as a closed camps rally. Protesters are creating a false illusion that detention facilities that house aliens crossing the border are substandard. So the fourth graders were video recorded, and they were chanting over and over, "Who do we hate? Donald Trump." Now before we go on, if you look at the picture of these kids who are rallying against Trump, one thing is noticeably missing. At least I can't see any little white boys. It's almost as if that were by design. They wanted girls and non-white children of both genders to participate, but it's kind of like they wanted to make sure there were no white males in the picture. Apparently the same message.
Well, okay, this is troubling on so many fronts. The question that I have, and this is a question that I really don't know the answer to, why is there such deep-seated hatred for Donald Trump among so many sectors of our society?
Well, I'll give you a possible answer on that, is because of the fact that the media has portrayed Donald Trump as a white nationalist. And this has been a talking point in the past on other, maybe on this show, but others as well, where Donald Trump has been portrayed as a white nationalist. Even though he is not a white nationalist, the media has portrayed him out to be a white nationalist. And because he's been portrayed as a white nationalist, that has caused every basically black groups, Mexican, Asian groups, to have a deep hatred towards Donald Trump because of the fact that they have looked at him as a white nationalist. There's a hatred against white nationalists. And so if he's a white nationalist, they hate him because they want to, when they think about restoring America, make America great again, they're looking at Donald Trump as making America a white nation, and they do not want that to happen. And so that's why there's such a hatred against Donald Trump, because he has been perceived as a white nationalist. And that's why the media have continually talks about Donald Trump being a nationalist, the walls on the border, getting us out of treaties that would not be pro-America. Anything that would look as anything that's pro-America or pro-white, he is considered a white supremacist and white nationalist. And that's why there's such a hatred against Donald Trump. Even though we know he's not, that's what the media has portrayed him out to be.
I think that's a large part of it, but also I think his general personality, which runs so contrary to a typical politician, also fuels this hatred. For example, I remember when Donald Trump was running for office and he first used the term America First. And everybody got wide-eyed and said, oh, that's a Nazi phrase. That was used by Lindbergh, entering World War II people. And you can't say that. So Donald Trump says, America First, America First, America First. And so now, yet today, just today, Donald Trump spoke at the United Nations. And what did he make as his theme? He made as his theme, America First. And he said all countries should think of their country first. And so it's a direct counter to the globalism of the last 50 years. And that's certainly not politic, but he's taking it and he's making it popular again. But that's just a smaller example. The biggest example came out yesterday when you had this young girl from Sweden who's come over, she came over by boat, I believe. Her name is Greta Thunberg, to talk about climate change. And whether you see her as good or whether you see her as bad, whether you like her or you dislike her, the thing that Donald Trump did came to my mind as something that no one in his position or any position remotely below him would ever do. He came out and criticized soundly a little 16-year-old girl on Twitter and whatever, and I thought, what kind of person is that, that he doesn't care for convention, he doesn't care for the aftershocks, he doesn't care for the blowback, he thinks, oh, this gal's crazy, and he criticizes her. And so it's that, I think, a lot of people, whether you like Greta Thunberg or you don't like her, the fact that he criticizes 16-year-old girls so harshly, that engenders dislike for Donald Trump. But as I look at it, and again, I know my wife doesn't like Greta Thunberg, but I think the idea of, and I've never listened to her, but the idea of making the world better for future generations and saving the planet is a good thing. I think to be heavily promoting your what you believe is a good thing, so I don't have anything bad to say about her. But I think that it is an amazingly good thing that we have a president that feels so comfortable that he'll come out and he'll criticize a little 16-year-old girl as the president of the United States. And that, I think, engenders a lot of hatred for him.
I notice that the far left hates anybody who is influential and effective. The reason they don't want us on YouTube is because we're influential. So I think they hate Donald Trump for another myriad of other reasons. Because he's effective. He is the exact opposite of what they want to portray us to be. That basically underscores the fact that people are flat out liars.
Yeah.
Well, he'll call them out on it. I mean, that's why he'll say, like, fake news, and he holds no punches back. And that's why they don't like him from that standpoint. You know, the left so often will, as we all know, they like to name call anyone that's a Christian or conservative or anyone with Western ideas thought, they like to name call. And so when you have someone like Donald Trump as a president with a very much influential position who will call him out on that and then will reverse that strategy and call them names like fake news, they can't stand that.
You know, I kind of agree with you, Ken. I did not agree with you until recently that when you say Donald Trump is very effective. I always thought Donald Trump was just a pinball bouncing from issue to issue, just being pushed along by his obstinate nature. But I'm beginning to think that there may be some method behind his capital M madness. And I truly think he's got a lot of crazy in him. But he's pushing us in a direction that we need to go in. And you know, it just might be, and I will begrudgingly admit, it just might be by design. And that's a very good thing. Okay. The final point of,
just before you go on, just so you know, we have a sizable group in the chat room on YouTube. They can't see the video, but they hear chatting. But they're watching on the weekend. So they're
okay. Both at the same time. Well, very good. But the last point I want to make is that...
And they want to know where all the little white babies are. No, I just...
yeah. They're protesting Donald Trump. They're saying we hate Donald Trump. In any event, there is some good that comes out of teachers getting young children together to say, we hate Donald Trump. The reason is that we have been called haters for so long, and hate in the last 50 years has been such a negative concept. You can't hate anything. Well, now the left is making hate fashionable again, because they're having little rallies with kids saying, hate this, hate that, hate that. And although, and I do believe that it is important to rehabilitate the concept of hate. I think there is good in hate. There's a lot of things that we should hate. We should hate bad things. And we don't hate anything anymore. For so long, we have just been accepting of everything. So this gradual rehabilitation of the emotion hate is a good thing. And even though it's directed against someone that and something that we don't like, the underlying promotion of the concept, I think, can lead to a positive development in this country, for what it's worth. Okay. Well, let's get another one. This one is, I didn't read the article, so I'm kind of flummoxed by the meaning. But you wrote, Ken, Islam is right about women, question mark. What's that all about?
This is a sign, a poster.
Now this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me, here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.